is Spectrum.
Alternative Myth, Homeopathy, Secret Society, Hypnosis, The Paranormal, Alternative Energy, UFO Abduction, The Weird, The Wild, and The Wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan here, my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Tonight's guest is Wade Frazier, who was groomed as a scientist from an early age, became fascinated by the subject of alternative energy when he was a teenager. As is so often the case with those with a clearly envisioned life mission when so young, his life path then was propelled him through a series of far-hitting experiences that qualified him to be one of the preeminent writers on the subject today. Wade's website, ahealplanet.net, comprises of over 1,200 of deeply thought-out, intelligent, and well-informed commentary on a number of the most important issues of our time. His direct personal experiences include working shoulder-to-shoulder for a number of years with Dennis Lee, who he describes as the Indiana Jones of free energy. Wade attests that Lee's larger-than-life experiences, many of which Wade witnessed at first hand, were authentic and occurred just as he reports it on his site. Welcome back, Wade. How are you?
Hi.
Hey, good. Wade. How you doing?
Hi, guys.
It's
Thanks
nice
for
to
having
talk.
Me on.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you again. I think you were back on a show a couple weeks ago, and you were talking about all the various free energy projects you were either involved with or you're aware of back in the time. What was the time period there? It stretches a couple decades, but
So, you know, my introduction was in 74, I would say, and then my hot and heavy days with Dennis Lee were 86 to 89, and then I did an encore kind of performance with him back in 96, 97. And then I was actually New Energy Movement with Brian O'Leary, 2003 and 4. So I've kind of come and gone.
Okay. So just a quick bullet point, because we've already gone through a lot of your history in the first interview. But for the listeners that haven't heard your previous interview, if you could just go through a quick bullet point of where you started, what got you interested in this area, and where you went from there.
Okay, well, thanks. So real briefly, I was essentially raised and groomed to be a scientist. When I was 16 years old, my first professional mentor invented what was considered the world's best engine for powering an automobile. And then that's when I got my kind of dreams of changing the world of energy. Working at you at age 16. Anyway, when I was, I had some kind of strange experiences that changed my studies from science to business, became a CPA. In 1986, I had another series of strange circumstances that landed me in a company that was making a heat pump, a super heat pump that saved about 80% of somebody's heating costs. And that was this guy named Dennis Lee, met here in Seattle in 86. And then that's kind of when it got wild. And so for the next 3 years, I was involved with Dennis. And in fact, we ended up in my hometown of Ventura, California, and that original engine that I was introduced to at age 16, we were trying to marry that with the panels from Dennis's heat pump. This is now 1988. And that's when they sort of lowered the boom on us. And so anyway, that were those years. And so then I was, survived the experience, kind of left the field, did a lot of began the research and writing that became my site today. And then in 96, Dennis, after a couple of stints behind bars, convinced me to go back to work with him again, and we did. And we were pursuing, free energy once again, but we were also involved with Brown's and Brown's Gas. And in fact, back up a little bit, back when I was with Dennis back in the late 80s and 90, also became aware of Sparky Sweet and his technology that was, he was doing it right down the road from where we were in Ventura. And then over the years, I've become aware of people like Adam Trombley, these kind of people. And then when I was with Dennis in 96, 97, he was busy promoting Brown's Gas, not so much as an alternative energy technology, but Brown's Gas produces low energy nuclear reactions, which can transmute radioactive materials. And then also during those years, one of my close fellow travelers got the Underground Exotic Technology Show from the people that run the world. And it became evident that all the things that I'm aware of and what the independent researchers are working on are very primitive compared to what's been developed in the above black world.
And that show, it didn't involve a big collection of previous inventions that were stored in the basement of an underground base. Those were back-engineered alien technology type of
the stuff that
hundreds,
was just,
hundreds of years beyond what you could imagine, right?
Yes, the stuff that was demonstrated certainly was not, you know, some sequestered inventor stuff. This was the good stuff that had been developed in, you know, multi-billion-dollar settings, you know, with top secret kind of black ops world technology developed, you know, 30th generation beyond the stuff that, you know, us free energy inventors and businessmen are working on. So we got a little show, you know, I didn't, but a close friend did, and they got a show of the good stuff. So,
yeah, that can really, you know, why are we spending all our time in the lab or the basements or whatever working on this, and here they got that, you know?
Absolutely, and again, one of the upshots of that whole thing was that they weren't demonstrating to taunt this person, they were demonstrating to encourage this person, and they would certainly like to bring this stuff out, but the climate is not safe to do that. So that was, in the end, I got encouragement from that.
There are competing interests.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. So the people who are demonstrating it definitely aren't the people calling the big shots.
Right. They want to see this stuff come out, but yep, they know that the battle is all uphill against the economic tycoons.
Yeah, they are not about to defy, as Greer calls them, Godzilla.
Right. Don't take Godzilla on his own island. Okay, so that's a good breakdown of your history and where you come from. Now I want to sort of drill down a bit. Tom, do you have a question?
Well, I want to wait to give us a little bit more on the specifics.
Say Sparky Sweets.
Yeah, like Sparky Sweet.
And what is it when you say a Sparky Sweet device? What does that mean?
So Sparky, and in fact, there's quite a bit of information out there on Sparky. Sparky worked his career at General Electric. He was a scientist. His specialty was magnetics, and in fact, again, Bearden has been trying to reproduce Sparky's work for a long time, I think unsuccessfully, but he's been definitely attempting to do that. And Sparky retired as, again, a career scientist at General Electric, playing around with magnetics down there in Los Angeles. And essentially, and again, depending on who you talk to, it seems like he stumbled onto a variation of what's called the Casimir effect and was able to create, if you will, almost a standing wave magnetically, that was able to amplify currents, and one of the measures of his device had it producing a million times as much energy as went into it. And unfortunately, Sparky created several working prototypes and mailed them off to the big energy institutions, you know, thinking that he was now going to become
his name would be in lights, and they throw a ticker tape parade for him.
Yeah. All of that stuff, exactly. And, the opposite happened. But Sparky, being this kind of pillar of the establishment guy, he got the FBI involved in his harassment. And I mean, he was, and he kept trying to work with the big institutions. He still, even though, you know, he got stonewalled pretty much, he kept trying. And, but,
I guess he figured if he kept trying, eventually they'd see his logic.
Maybe, you know, and except he eventually fled into hiding in the Mojave Desert the week before he died because of the threats. They basically gave him an ultimatum. And my God, Sparky was like 85 years old at the time. And so, you know, he had a pretty rough ride and a pretty rough end there. And but he's one of the more, you know, really famous because actually Bearden was, you know, Bearden was around a lot of the theory of this stuff. And I think Sweet was probably the first guy with the goodies, you know, that Bearden kind of stumbled into. And they spent a lot of time testing that. And in fact, I believe it produced anti-gravity effects also.
Yeah, wasn't that the, I think I remember a story that, I don't know if it was Sparky or not, but somebody had called Bearden and said, you know, that they were having some difficulty, and Bearden said, well, why don't you try this and this, and he tried it, and he says, now, you know, be careful, don't give it too much power, because that thing will shoot up through the roof, right? And the guy said, okay, yeah, I won't do that, I'll just do half power or something. And then the guy called him, you know, a while later, and eventually admitted to Bearden, I had to try it, I had to. So he pumped it up to full power, and it went up through the roof or something.
You know, I've heard this one. I don't think that was Sparky. I believe Sparky's was a pretty controlled experiment where they actually had it on a scale, and it got lighter. It kept getting lighter as they cranked it up. So,
wow.
But it was, so Sparky's stuff was, he had the stuff. He had the goods.
Yep.
At the same time, though, and this is one of the problems with the inventors like a Sparky, is that, I mean, he wrote a textbook on trying to describe the physics behind it, et cetera. And, but and this is how to say it, where Sparky was, he was on the frontiers of this stuff, at least, you know, for the freelance inventor types. And he wasn't exactly sure what was happening all the time. I mean, some of his prototypes would just stop working. And he never figured it out. Or when ice would form on it, when it would run. I mean, that was, I remember when he demonstrated to somebody close to me, and he was like, and here's the damnedest thing. Watch this, you know. So there was still a lot of mystery about exactly what was going on. But Sparky, though, apparently came up with a way of conditioning his magnets to achieve the effect. And he took that to his grave with him, how to do that. So that was one of the
that's a shame.
That's too common also, I'm afraid.
Well, Bearden probably knows a little bit about it.
Oh, no, Bearden's been trying to reproduce it ever since. And so, and I don't think anybody's pulled it off, at least in our white world, you know, of aspiring inventors and stuff.
Whatever happened to this fellow's, you know, test materials and such?
Documents.
Sparky's?
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what happened after he died. He went into hiding. I know that. And so I don't know in the end. Yeah, I mean, maybe Tom's got it. I really haven't kept up, let's say, as far as in the aftermath of that, of exactly what happened. But knowing the people, knowing the kind of threats he was receiving, et cetera, I doubt it was like, you know, come on and get this stuff, people. I don't think so.
No, probably not. How about, so there's other people you're aware of that have been in the field. Brown's gas. Now, when you say Brown's gas, what was that experiment like? What were they working with, and what were they hoping to achieve?
So Brown's gas is, in fact, there was a movie titled Chain Reaction. And Chain Reaction was actually a thinly veiled, it was Brown. It was about Brown. And in fact, when Brown was in Southern California trying to make things happen, again, he had congressmen in his camp, et cetera. Some filmmakers picked his brains for a couple days and said they were going to, you know, get him the money, et cetera. And a couple years later, they made this movie called Chain Reaction.
That's the one with Keanu Reeves and Morgan Freeman.
Exactly. And in fact, if you ever saw a picture of Brown and saw the scientist, you're like, huh, that's a kind of a knockoff on him, you know. And then, China built a city for Brown. He had like 2,000 scientists working for him in a city that China built for him. And in the movie, you see him with this Asian assistant, you know. So there was a lot of this kind of inside, you know, humor.
Inside
kind
of joke thing. Stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was Keanu Reeves playing?
he wasn't playing Brown. He was playing the I don't know.
I don't know who he was playing.
I don't know in real life who that was supposed to be. But anyway, but they literally used Brown's gas and some of its effects to be the premise for that movie. And but anyway, so the thing about Brown's gas is that it's water, but it's water that's been, you know, split in a way that has these very unusual properties. And the you know, it can sublimate tungsten. I mean, you put this flame on, so you can put it on your hand, it doesn't do anything, and then you can put it on a tungsten rod that supposedly has, you know, a melting point of 10,000 degrees and just vaporizes. And so,
okay.
Very unusual stuff. And one of the effects that has been performed, and this, in fact, the Chinese government, the U.S. government, the U.K. government, and I think some other governments, I mean, this experiment's been carried out many times. And in fact, where you guys are in Canada, Andrew McCrouse, he's performed it a number of times. He's at a university up there in Ottawa. But it produces transmutational effects, and they, in fact, in the scientific realm, and again, it's you know, sort of like supposedly some, you know, impossible thing, but they call them low energy nuclear reactions, you know, cold fusion. These are all in this series of reactions that, according to classical atomic theory, you shouldn't be able to do these things. You shouldn't be able to, you know, at the electron level, do something that's going to affect the nucleus. But again, the Brown's gas effects on transmutation has been performed. I mean, I'm talking like 100 times or something. I mean, it's been performed a lot. And we were actually, I spoke at Department of Energy hearings with Dennis back in 1997 to try to get the federal government to look into using Brown's gas to solve the nuclear waste problem. And
was that well received?
Well, that's kind of a funny thing. So he and I spoke at the Savannah facility down there in South Carolina, where, you know, practically glows at night. I mean, literally Atomic Boulevard was like the street where the hearings were held. And the most excited person at the hearings was the DOE guy who ran the hearings. And at the lunch break, he came out and sort of followed us out the parking lot. And he said something I'll never forget. He basically said we were the third group that attended these hearings and proposed a neutralization technology. And then he said, you know, the people managing nuclear waste stand to make a lot of money managing nuclear waste. And if your answer doesn't make them a lot of money, you can forget it, you know. And this was the DOE guy.
He told you straight up. That.
Yeah, he hands us his card and he says, you know, I'm an underling with little power. I probably can't do much good, but I'll try, you know. And so, in fact, we did get a call from the DOE like a couple months later, you know, some, you know, junior clerk guy having to check the box, you know, of these guys who presented at the hearings. And but of course, it never went anywhere. And anyway, but so we were involved with that stuff, you know, and Brown's gas, that is probably. I mean, that's a very interesting effect. And in fact, the whole low energy nuclear reactions, some people might call that a Pandora's box. And that's kind of chain reaction. The movie was about Pandora's box, you know, blowing up a city, you know,
right.
with this effect. But anyway, on the science physics end of that, it really is a paradigm changer and unusual. Again, in fact, Brown, I mean, there's theories about how it does it, but I don't think anybody really knows. You know, at least out here in the white world, you know exactly how it does what it does.
And when by white world, you mean white hat, meaning?
No, I just I talk about white science and black science. You
right,
know,
right.
So white science is the public, you know, peer-reviewed literature and this kind of stuff. The black stuff is the stuff that they demonstrate underground to select few.
Right.
That makes the textbooks look like cave drawings. You know.
Yeah,
so that's
unfortunate
white,
because the guys who are working with the cave drawings. Are the peer-reviewed scientists who comes out and say, well, this is not possible, and then they can pull out their physics books and say exactly why it's not possible and
yes.
wrong. But yeah, they'll never know.
It was the same guys who said the Wright brothers couldn't fly, you know? So, yeah, I hear that. And that's a real common problem. That's something that, you know, Brian O'Leary has taken that you know, much further than I have trying to press into the scientific establishment on these issues. And again, Brian, of course, being an ex-astronaut, et cetera, and an ex-Ivy League professor and all these things, I mean, he knew everybody. And so when he eventually, you know, completed his initial investigations into free energy technology, visited labs across the world, et cetera, he tried to be the Paul Revere of free energy, and he knocked on all the doors that, you know, he used to institutions that he used to, you know, work at, like Princeton, you know, and Berkeley,
right.
These places, and he found no takers, you know, anywhere.
Yeah, everybody backed right up.
Yeah,
you know, he had the smarts, right? I mean, he had the
he had the credential.
He had the physics background and everything.
Yeah, and Brian had, you know, Brian's seen a lot of stuff, you know, now I will say that Brian's not the guy who got that underground show, but Brian is aware of a lot of that kind of stuff too.
So he knows that there's black projects out there with
absolutely
advanced technology, and he's completely aware of it.
And in fact, when I first told Brian, and this is a long time ago, when I first told Brian about this show that my friend got, he goes, "Oh, we got a show from the Spooks, huh?"
Oh, so he knew and he identified with what it was about. Okay.
Well, he was just kind of like, oh, yeah, that, you know, so, yeah, so, oh. Anyway, I said, in these circles, it's not that unusual.
Right.
It's not that unusual.
Okay, how about Tom?
Yeah, Adam.
Trombley? Adam Trombley.
Trombley, okay. Yeah, in fact, I have heard that somebody is doing a documentary that is going to feature Adam. And I think a lot of us in this field are really, and we're really hopeful and eager. I mean, I'd stand in line to see that show, you know. And so Adam is, he's definitely one of the, well, I don't want to say a legendary figure in this field. You know, he's a scientist, his father, long story. I told some of those, I think, last time, but Adam demonstrated his homopolar generator in New York City, downtown Manhattan, right after he talked to the United Nations.
And what would that be? What would a
homopolar generator do?
Yeah.
I think it's getting at the zero point field like Sparky's thing is. I mean, if you read there's blueprints on the internet and this kind of stuff, and it basically it's tapping into the zero point field, and so it's another way of doing it. And this one has moving parts, though. You know, Sparky's was solid state; the homopole looked like it had moving parts. But I mean, pretty much all the free energy technology is tapping into the zero point field, which is, and again, you can really go down the rabbit hole of quantum physics and stuff here, but essentially, the zero point field is, it's everywhere. It's kind of maybe the substrate of physical reality. And it's had, in fact, Gene Manning's collected about 30 names over the years that various inventors and theorists have used to try to describe this field.
They call it the etheric field.
Yes.
They call it the null point field. They call it the,
yes.
You know, there's 100 names for it.
Exactly. And she's collected 30. And anyway, I think it's all the same thing that, and again, it's a lot harder than it looks. It's not that easy to tap it, but it has been done. And I think at the Above Black World, I think they run their coffee makers on it, you know, so, but.
Yeah. I mean, look at the back in the days, you know, there's all. A lot of people trying to get man in the air and keep them there, and now look what, you know, we got so many planes crisscrossing the over top of the earth that we need global positioning satellites just to keep track of them all.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I was just reading just this morning on space junk, you know, and how many pieces of space junk are out there floating around, you know. So yeah, it's a lot up there. But anyway, so Trombley demonstrated his device in New York City, and this is almost 20 years ago, I think. And then, in fact, Adam is pretty. You won't, and that's why if there's a documentary, it's going to really have him tell the story. A lot of us are very anxious to hear it because I've heard bits and pieces of it, and I would say it might be more spectacular than Dennis's story, but it's pretty amazing. Anyway, Adam though kind of downplays it and says, my life became a bad spy novel after that, you know. But and he survived the experience. But in fact, interview he did about 10 years ago. He lives in Hawaii, and he had a new facility put up, and he's putting solar panels on it, and he's kind of joking, I mean, kind of in a depressed way about putting solar panels on this thing, because he's had three of his technology seized, I think, by the federal government, and so there he is putting solar panels on his roof and kind of chuckling at the absurdity of it.
Yeah, how primitive.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so Adam also had the goods. Adam was demonstrating it right in Manhattan and paid pretty heavy price for doing that.
Okay, who else do you know that is from that time frame that was a big name besides Sparky and Adam and
back in those days?
Brian O'Leary and... Bedini.
Bedini
was a big name, huge.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, and there, in fact, De Palma. So you got De Palma.
Yeah, that's true.
You guys. In fact, Brian and his Globetrotters, Tarawi, a guy in India. There's a guy in India who's actually a pretty high-ranking scientist in the India power, the energy industry infrastructure there. And Brian's visited his labs a few times. And there was some other guy in Japan. Can't remember his name. Brian visited him also. Again, somebody with a lot of establishment science credentials. And I'm sorry, I can't recall the name right now. But, but they're around, you know. And some of these guys are still at it.
I think Bedini's still at it, actually.
Yeah, I think. And so you get some that are still at it.
He made this 17-foot, did you hear about that? He made a 17-foot replica of a Bedini motor, 17 feet high.
Oh, no.
Was it Bedini? I think it might have been. I know it was, I seen a YouTube video, and I couldn't believe it. It was insane how many people were flocking around that. Wasn't there also, I know you don't keep up with the new stuff that's out there.
Not so much.
But you do still keep in somewhat in contact, or at least loose contact with some of the older people that have been involved in it. Now, a lot of them are they no longer working in the areas, or are they just dead?
Well, you know, if, how to say it, only people like Dennis Lee will actually, you know,
pound it out.
Spend a couple stints behind bars, you know, survive murder attempts, and then keep trying. I mean, I think Adam, after a few years of that, he finally said, "I think I'm done now," you know, and he has been done. I mean, he's pretty much, he doesn't do it any longer. And so, you know, once you've been through one or two of those experiences, you're kind of done. If you survive the experience, you're kind of done.
Once you make a device and the government comes and steals it, then you make another one and they come and steal it. And you go, okay, one more shot. You make another one, they come and take that away from you.
At
that point, you're just like, what's the point?
Once they steal the first, I mean, the so-called steal, they don't steal it. They use national securities laws to seize it, okay?
Right.
And then what happens is that you actually, they say, if you make one of these again, you go to prison. So then what you do is you make a different kind. And then they classify that one too. So I think that's what... Adam may have gone through something like that. But anyway, once they take it away the first time, they pretty much say you don't pass go. And if we catch you making this particular one again, then you and Leavenworth Prison will become very close friends. And so usually they try to do other avenues. That's my understanding. But again, once you did the first one, I mean, he had a laboratory that had something like $20 million of equipment in it. And he came home and it was all gone, you know, and Adam's going, you know, once they take all of your gear, it kind of takes the wind out of your sails, you know? And so anyway, that's the thing. It's like, I've stood there as they carted off our stuff, you know, and, you know, that takes the wind out of your sails, and not too many people can recover from that and try again, you know, and some do, but not many.
So wait, what's it going to take to get some of this stuff out,
in our lifetime?
In our lifetimes?
What's going to happen?
That's a very, I think, an extremely important question. The answers, you know, and I'll give you my perspective on that. I do think, and I'm aware of, again, some of what's happening at the high levels. And I'm not going to call myself a deeply connected insider. You know, in fact, some of the insider stuff is probably disinfo, but some right. of the stuff,
but you hear things, you know,
I hear things. And some of it, when, again, when a friend gets the underground demo, you know, you're kind of going, oh, okay, well, that's no longer in the field. That's no longer in the legendary, you know, isn't really real category with me anymore. That moves over into that's real. Okay.
Yeah, you're beyond that whole questioning, I wonder if.
Yeah, exactly. So you get to see enough where you're going, okay, this stuff's real, you know, and then it becomes down to, you know, what are the odds, or how to say, what are the dynamics right now that are happening? And my perception right now is that, like the people who demonstrated this other stuff long ago, if the information that, let's say, Steve Greer has been receiving from some of these people is accurate, and again, the other scuttlebutt I've seen in the field leads me to believe that it probably is, that it is very fragmented. They do want this stuff to come out, and more of them do. And the, let's say, the holdouts are really holding out, and that's kind of the real dark side of the force there. And I don't think anybody wants to openly defy them. And I have this feeling that the near term outcome is going to be determined by what happens at those levels. Unfortunately, I wish it wasn't that way, but I think, you know, if you had to ask me to put money on it, if it's going to happen in our lifetime, I'm going to say that some dam's going to break at that level, and we're going to see some stuff trickle down to us. If I had to put money on it, I would put my money on that. Now, I actually am trying to do something different, you know, and so I'm hoping to raise enough awareness to where, and in fact, one of the problems is that these deeply connected insiders, et cetera, there's kind of no place for them to go outside, you know. You have now a number of them have gone on places like Camelot, et cetera. And I think that's what Carrie and Bill are trying to do, you know, is create kind of a home, a place where this stuff
right.
can come out. And I think if more people were aware of not just that stuff, but essentially how energy runs the ball game on Earth, you know, and if we were really a more aware, informed public about a lot of the real basic issues around energy and how our world operates, I think it would really create a more fertile field for this stuff to manifest. And that's what I'm trying to do. I don't know if it's going to be helpful at all.
Yeah.
But it's something that when I would see when I was involved in these efforts. And you're doing this Indiana Jones thing, and then, you know, when they got you in jail, there you are, and you're being sprayed across the media. It's like you don't have any allies then. I mean, they're all chased off, you know. And so I'm trying to build a kind of an infrastructure of awareness that can support, you know, this kind of stuff coming forward. So, and again, that's not sexy. It's kind of. It's not easy. It's not a spectacle, but I think it's needed. I mean, that's one thing I noticed was missing, you know, in these efforts was that.
Right.
So, Wade, why don't you give us your website so people can check it out and read?
Yeah, you got like 1,200 pages of
at least
of written information on there.
So you can put my name into a search engine and it pops right up, you know. But also, it's ahealedplanet.net is the domain name. So. And so that's the domain name, and yeah, there's 1,200 or so pages of material that took a long time. Took about 12,000 hours of work is what I've kind of estimated, you know, it took to do that.
Wow. So your mission right now is to just get the word out there, and your new effort on Project Abalon, mm-hmm. you've got a thread going there
mm-hmm.
called a Healed Planet. That mm-hmm. you post in there all the time. You're talking to people every
and
day.
I've actually slowed down there just because, how to say it, the writing that I'm hoping to achieve that can kind of help set the paradigm for what I'm trying to do I'm not getting it done. So only so many hours in a day. So right now I'm trying to really focus on doing that. Well, and
well, plus you're working like 16-hour days.
Yeah, it's a, I'm, yeah, my how to say it is, you know, do the, in fact, I figured it out. I probably spent like, you know, 10 years of my life for free doing this stuff, and another 10 years of my life digging out of debt for that stuff. And so, you know, it doesn't leave much time left, you know.
Right.
Do things. And so,
so anyway, you're not working in the, you're not like working in the energy field now, are you? You're
No, I'm not. I pretty much bowed out of that. Okay. In fact, my last stint with Dennis, that was kind of the end. And I think I mentioned in the last show when I was with Dennis the last time, we were targeted by an extremely sophisticated sting operation, probably mounted. I mean, the federal government was definitely a part of that. My experience talking to people like Tom Bearden is that they're not really the masterminds, but they are the muscle, you know, to do that stuff. And so once I realized that I came pretty close to going to prison my last stint with Dennis, this coward said, eh, that's too rough.
Oh, okay. Just for a message for the white hats out there, Wade does not want a show. Does not want to go to the underground base and see what you got.
The brave. I know a few people that would probably like to go do that.
They jump at it, sure.
It would be worthy audience, you know. But not everybody gets one of those. That's for sure.
I think you said before that once you get to the point where your whatever you're doing is important enough that they give you a show, you're also important enough that you could be, you know, taken out.
Oh, that comes with that. Absolutely. That's that territory. And in fact, when I was with Dennis back in 96, 97, I'll tell you, all of the different players, because Dennis put, you know, 5,000 people into a sports stadium to talk about free energy. And then we were, you know, meeting at the White House with Al Gore, this stuff. And over the years, as I realized, all the different parties and interests and stuff that were like focused on us and messing with us and trying to get an angle on us, it was like, I mean, it was bewildering to realize all the interests that were at play there. And so, yes, if you start playing at those kind of levels, you get a lot of interest. And yes, it's hostile interest a lot. And then it's also interest of trying to stop you, but also interest trying to capitalize on it. And again, it's just this, it's a three-ring circus. In fact, yeah. Three-ring circus doesn't
even describe it. The greed factor is pretty big.
Oh, awesome. Off the scale. Absolutely.
Yeah. Once they can figure out a way to make, to turn, translate off of, oil and gas and make billions and billions of dollars off of supposed free energy.
No, quadrillions of dollars.
Yeah, quadrillions. Then you'll see them lining up.
Oh, yeah. And
but that's the problem. How, there's got to be a way to make money on free energy.
Wait a minute. The U.S. can get out of debt maybe by then, no?
Yeah.
They can buy back their country.
Hey. From China.
Yeah, that's one of the, in fact, anybody who's been in the field very long, I mean, definitely the gold rush effect is one of the most damaging ones. And hardly any effort really, they all get scathed by that, the gold rush effect. If you get close, oh, yes. The sharks just come swarming.
I'll take a show. Tom, would you go with me?
Definitely.
Underground base? Yeah. we could tell you, but we might have to kill you. You'd be right on it?
I'm crazy.
Yeah.
I'm crazy. I'll go for it.
Sure. We'll call you up and tell you about it, Wade.
You know, you could actually probably like run an ad somewhere, you know, in the paper, say,
yeah.
Come and pick me up, please.
We'll go.
We'll go. Yeah. We're not actually free energy inventors or anything. We just want the show.
Hey, you got a show?
I've been trying to get an alien to land in my backyard for 35 years. I put my time in. I've been in the UFO field. Tom, you've been in the UFO field longer than I have. You would think by now, just out of appreciation for the time that we put in.
So you're telling me you're worthy. I get it.
I'm worthy. They should show up, you know. We put our time in. Come on. Give us a visit.
I hear what you're saying, you know. And
I might
take
a few pictures, you know.
I gotcha.
Me and an alien surfing. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you know, for the underground show, I have to say, in my case, I'm not worthy. Okay. And that's kind of where I am. I don't think I'm
You've
worried.
You've heard it here, folks.
the people who get those shows, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Not many even survive long enough to get to that stage.
Right.
You know, so yeah, it's quite an adventure. Absolutely.
Well, we're sorry, but we got to take a quick break right now, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
Are you suffering from constant pain in the knee, shoulder, wrist, and other parts of your body? Needle-free acupuncture with Lapingo Life Pads may be the answer. Lapingo Life Pads combine ancient wisdom with modern nanotechnology and advanced engineering. They're designed to relieve pain naturally with no needles and no side effects. That's Lepingo, lapingoproducts.com.
Hello, this is Scott Jordan, and I would personally like to thank all of our listeners for their emails of encouragement. It means a great deal to us. All of Spectrum shows are available in two formats, an MP3 stream you can listen to on our site, as well as a YouTube version. All of Spectrum shows are full-length and free to listen to, and if I have my way, always will be. Tom and myself do all this work out of pocket, and freely give our time and effort to giving you, the listener, the best, most informative experience possible. I would also like to thank our listeners who have donated in the past to help with our expenses. Every donation goes directly to keeping the project alive. Thank you, enjoy, and keep listening.
You've always been told to think about the alternative. Well, we can do better. We can show you. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com will improve your health, well-being, and lifestyle through hundreds of different products, from herbs and well-being products to our large selection of specialty clothing, jewelry, and more. We ship around the world with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. There's always new products and amazing specials. Let us show you at AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com.
But it seems to me, though, that just like I was talking to another gentleman tonight, I said a lot of the things that happen, not only in, never mind in free energy or in, you know, any area right now, is that it seems to be concentrated, you know, in the American being the head of everything, you know, or the chiefy wiffy of everything, you know, just recently, right, in the UFO community or UFO field, right. Numerous countries had come out with information on their UFO, like they released files from, you know, government files.
Absolutely.
Like New Zealand did it, Ecuador did it, you know, numerous countries like that. You know what? Yep. Nobody gave a damn. Nobody even made a fuss or a muss or anything, right?
Yep, I hear you.
Tomorrow, right, some guy comes out and says, oh, I was in the army or someplace. And you know, I know inside information, and he's put on the pedestal, and like he is the greatest guy since, you know, since sliced bread. It's because he, you know, he lives in a country where, you know, you can go and make a big noise because you have the ability to do so, right? Okay. And it seems to me a lot of times that we focus, in North America at least, in too much of that. You know, there is so much stuff out there that we don't know of. Matter of fact, Americans don't know a whole lot about anybody else, or maybe they don't care to, for the, you know, because of the style of how you know America works, right?
But yes,
if there is probably just as much, right, just as much people out there in other countries doing similar type of work, right? How come we don't get to hear it? And guys like yourself, who have been in this game for a long time, right? You guys would know who these characters might be out there in other places as well that may have been able to come up with whatever.
So I hear what you're saying, and again, I personally don't keep up, okay, on this stuff as much. I can't help but be aware of a lot of this because I, in the circles I run in,
right.
but like Brian O'Leary, like, again, I will defer to Brian on this. I mean, like, for instance, there was, what was his name, Marinoff? So this was a German guy? who ended up, you know, leaping from the top of the university library, you know, backwards, you know, here a few years ago, Brian Newham. No, you get bumped off in other countries too. And however, I know that Brian, who has trotted the globe for many years, he started doing this back in the about 20 years ago. That's when he started really getting involved in the free energy and investigation and literally traveling the world many times. I've heard him say it. He goes, yes, the invention and the suppression, United States is the, that's where it's happening. And so all I can say is this is what Brian said, and Brian probably has a different perspective than I do on the why. And I am giving my opinion on what I've seen when I was involved in this field. And again, I'm really not on the ground like I used to be. So that's just my opinion, and it could be wrong. Okay.
Well, I think maybe they're not, possibly they're not called global controllers. Maybe they're called global controllers for a reason.
No, that's not the point I was trying to make. The point I was trying to make was that, you know, for the most part, like in whether we're in the UFO field, the energy field, or anything else for that matter, we tend to always hear the same names popping up, right?
Right.
I'm sure there's other folks out there that do probably just as much work, and if not more so, right? And in the same areas as we do,
and
right?
We don't get the press.
But we don't get to hear it because we seem to concentrate in our own little, you know, backyard here, and we always, you know, hear the same names, you know, like Greer and these guys,
so.
You know. And
yeah, I think so. You know, oh boy.
I think it's coming out a little bit, but not much. A video came out. Tom, what was the guy in Brazil? It was the guy in Brazil, was it? Who came out with they talked to the president of the country?
It was Bolivia.
Bolivia. Yeah. He talked to the president of
Bolivia,
the company.
Bolivia, Ecuador, New Zealand. You know, all these guys, all these countries came out with all their information. Did any of the CNNs or anybody say anything about it? No.
No, you can watch a YouTube video on it that's been translated into English. Whoopee-doo. But you won't see it on the next, UFO Hunters.
I hear you.
So, you won't, because it's not American. It's not.
I hear you.
It's just a beef we have about the worldwide thing that's happening, but
everything happens around America. If it ain't America,
we have, how to say it. And let me give you an example. And in fact, I'm going to get out of the energy field for a minute and just talk about the medical field. It's a very similar suppression dynamic. But Brian O'Leary, in fact, he's publicly been trying to do this. And again, this is, the United States is infamous for this. They did it in Mexico a lot, but it's the first time I heard they actually did it in Ecuador, where a guy named Greg Catton, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, alternative medicine practitioner, deals with cancer. It sounded kind of like Hoxie's paste. But anyway, Brian, for instance, had a skin cancer, and, you know, he was going to, the recommendation was to go and get it cut off or whatever. And Greg, he visited Brian there in his place in Vilcabamba, and Greg cured him. Mm-hmm. And Greg was actually kidnapped in Ecuador and put on a plane. And he's sitting in a U.S. prison today. Okay, and the FDA had him kidnapped and brought back to the United States. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's just an example of the long arm of the apparatus in the United States. And and I know, and again, I'm not, and again, I'm not a UFO guy, okay? But you guys are into it. You guys are, I'll call you experts. My understanding, and again, I'm going back 20 some years now, but I thought that the UFO control mechanism was kind of headquartered in the U.S. Wasn't it that way a long time ago?
Well, I mean, you sort of think that's the way it seems, right? Only because, all the stories that seem to flow around, you know, even on, you know, on the worldwide scale, had always been, based on pretty much, let's say, North America,
uh-huh.
Or United States. It's not like... Like, for instance, now you go on the internet, you know, and who are always the big shots, right? The big shots are always North Americans, right? Mm-hmm. They're not. I'm sure there's just as many Germans and, you know, British and French and whatever, but nobody ever hears of those guys.
Well, I hear what you're saying. Brian can speak to this. I mean, again, Brian, I would look to Brian on this, but I know Brian has mixed it up. I mean, he was in a conference in Barcelona in 2009, I believe. Brian really is a globetrotter, and he's interacted with the international free energy community. And, I mean, he's been there. And my perception of what Brian has said about this is that, yeah, most of the people that are trying to do this stuff are in the United States, and most of the suppression activities are happening in the United States. It doesn't mean it's not happening in other places, and in fact, it does. But it's for some reason, and again, I have a feeling it's because we're the biggest, richest country, and there's more people trying to do it.
I beg to differ on that one, too.
Okay, that's fine.
You guys are not the richest country anymore. China is now.
Well,
that's new to you.
I'll tell you what. I would say the average person in the world thinks that they would probably be economically, individually better off living here than in Shanghai.
Well, that may be so, but not for long, probably.
Oh, we're declining. I mean, if you're familiar with my work, I have a 250-page essay on the American Empire, you know, and how we're, you know, at this point we're in our decline, you know. So no, I get that.
Right now, if we were to look in the world economics, I think you know, America right now is owned by China, basically.
Well, they own $1 trillion of our federal debt, you know, and at so.
And mention how much you know, physical resources that you know, from iron to whatever else.
Yeah, well, energy is the big one always. And so, I hear you. No, sure. And so the United States is definitely a declining empire. It's been that way. In fact, my work, I you know, go into quite a bit of depth on this, and I will more in the future. But the United States, in its first energy crisis in 1973, that is when real wages per hour also peaked. Okay, and they have been stagnant ever since. And so I would say that the United States has been in economic decline pretty much most of my lifetime, you know. And again, we've had the internet and some high-tech things happening, but energy consumption per capita, that is the number one indicator of the wealth of any country. And the United States is still consumes more energy than any other nation on earth per capita, you know. And again, when we have 300 million people that are doing that, and so again, we 25% of the world's energy gets consumed in the United States. And
no doubt.
So anyway, we're still I hear what you're saying, the wheels are coming off, and you know, but it's the thing where as long as we have a huge military presence in the Middle
East. That's
you know?
About the only thing.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and so no, I'm not gonna defend. If you're familiar with my work, the last thing I'm doing is trying to defend the American flag, you know. And so anyway, I hear what you're saying, and your question though about so why is it where the United States is this way? That's my guess, okay, and I think it's probably close to the truth, but again, other people keep up on it more than I do. And all I'm saying was when I was in the game, this was where it was happening. I remember back again, 20 years ago, 20, no, 25 years ago. And again, people are, and when you're getting the snot kicked out of you in the U.S., I mean, the natural impulse is, gee, what country can we go to where we can do this unmolested? Right. And the answer I have is, there is nowhere to go. Okay, it is a truly global reach.
Well,
and again, Brian can tell you about dead free energy inventors in a lot of the countries besides the United States. And so it's a global phenomena. But again, the United States, though, is where you have more pesky inventors and engineers, okay, than you have anywhere else. And so that's my opinion on why you've seen more of that happen in the United States. Now, I mean, I don't know, you know, what you're thinking, but I suppose that people can think that there's a dog and pony show happening with a lot of the big names of free energy, and they're really, you know, they're not who they appear to be in these
kinds. That sort of crossed my mind.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and there are, how to say it, that could be happening, although
So I'll tell you what, I mean, the big name, and I'm not going to name names, but in this field, the large names in this field, definitely, and I've heard it, and I've been in the room with people saying, you know, so-and-so, is he real? Mm-hmm. Or is he really on a special assignment? And so, and there's that kind of suspicion that is there, you know, and you know what? Maybe so. Or, and in fact, I think, how to say it, I personally, I don't try to get too conspiratorial minded about that, but there is definitely a lot of disinformation, okay, a ton of disinformation in many different ways. And so there's possible that very sincere, in fact, this is well known. I mean, where you're a really sincere, you know, person who's really going to try to do it, and you end up sort of being led down the path of you're never going to be productive because there are people who are, you know, they are not who they appear, and you are being led down the path of not being productive. And you got to be careful who your friends and allies are, obviously, in this field, because yes, there are people who definitely are not who they appear to be. And in fact, we got infiltrated by some. I mean, there are people that we had professional provocateurs infiltrate our organizations, and they would strike when the time was right, which is when you were most vulnerable, is when they would strike. However, it is difficult to distinguish the provocateurs from the just real greedy capitalist Shark Tank people too. And so that's the thing where in the end, you're kind of going, was that guy on the payroll or was he not? You know, and in fact, there are some people I know were on the payroll. Some people I'm not sure are on the payroll. And in fact, here's one of the interesting things that I've discovered over the years is that the people who are actually provocateurs that are on the payroll, this is kind of, and in fact, it's not even contract CIA stuff, although it's related to that. Mm-hmm. But once these people do their dirty work, they don't like live on the Riviera afterward. I mean, it's not like they get, I mean, yeah, they offered us $1 billion to go away, but it's not like that the hitmen got $1 million each. It's something to where they end up, what I've seen this. In fact, the guy who really took his mask off and took us down to Ventura when Dennis was in jail, he's in prison today. He was involved in a Mormon scam 20 years later, and he's probably never going to live to see outside of the bars. And I have a feeling that if he was a paid provocateur, eventually he got, you know, furloughed, and he had to make it on his own. His own talent, you know, and so he ended up being involved in other scams, and well, that time he ended up going to prison, you know, and so in fact, the guy who was the hitman in Seattle, when he was developing his credentials and afterwards, he's got these signature moves of using the legal system as a weapon, you know, but anyway, I think today he's freelancing. He's not doing it necessarily on the payroll, although he posed as a Tesla researcher after he got done with his Seattle work, you know. And so, yeah, you see him. And in fact, I remember, I think Gary Vesterman, I remember this is like 15 years ago. He was at one of these, you know, new science conferences. And then that's a pretty famous article. And it was like, there were like, I forget how many CIA guys were there. But it was a bunch. And the CIA guys are not the guys who are really the agents, really. I mean, again, the people really running the show, it's privatized. It's not government employees that are really...
The CIA agents are taking notes.
Yeah, the CIA is taking notes, exactly. The people who are the ones you really got to look out for, they're not on the CIA payroll, you know? And so, again, this CIA guy who offered Dennis the money, he was an errand boy, but, you know, and in fact, I doubt he even knows who, you know, gave him the mission. I don't know, it's compartmentalized and stuff, you know, and so, okay, so anyway, and that's all that cloak and dagger stuff, and it's for real. I mean, it happens, and it's like, and if you start playing high enough, you will encounter them, and it's a thing where, but at the same time, it's hard to know who's who in the zoo. I mean, it's not easy. They don't, you know, hand you your business card like, hey, I work for, you know, and it doesn't work that way, you know, and so.
I want to ask you like a straight up question, though.
Uh-huh.
Do you think, or... In without naming names, of course, uh-huh. Right? Any of the big boys that we're talking about, you know, right now, are playing a show?
The what do you mean, big boys? You mean the big names in free energy?
Yes.
Okay. What about them?
I said, do you think any of them are playing this pony show right now?
They're actually not who they appear to be.
Or doing it for different reasons.
Oh, my God. You know, so the thing is that each one of us, every day I go to bed and I wonder what my motivation is, you know. Why do I do what I do, you know? I'll tell you, the perils of playing the free energy game. The delusions of grandeur. So there was one pretty famous free energy person who actually thought they were the second coming. You know, they thought they were Jesus Christ come back again, you know, and that's the perils of playing this game, is that stuff can, I've seen a lot of contenders fall by the wayside, you know, and so in order to play at those high levels, it's quite a process to get there. And so I think, how to say it, we're all wounded. I mean,
we all have egos,
we're all wounded, and some people, in fact, Hank Greer, one of his books, he talked about when he was hanging out with Lawrence Rockefeller, and Rockefeller had his, you know, so-called entourage around him, and it was pretty evident that he was surrounded with people who would make sure that he never did anything too productive, you know, that he pretty much was, you know, played philosopher king and contemplated his navel, but that he was never going to get to where he became a problem and had to be dealt with. And so again, I said, it's a science, you know, and that's the thing where Bearden knows a lot more about this than I do. And he's talked about game theory and the way they do this. And in fact, what I've seen, that's what I'm saying. And Bearden, you know, he does, like, he makes mistakes in his presentations of the physics, et cetera. And this is well known, right? And it's like, is he doing that deliberately to protect people, or I don't know what the answer is, but when he describes to me the sting operation almost got him, and I realized at the same time that he was probably getting that, we were getting a similar one. Tom all of a sudden got a lot of cred with me, you know. I was like, going, oh, and again, I didn't figure it out till 10 years later, but it's just like, okay, wow. And so I don't know the answer is, and all I'll say is that I know that at those levels, people look at each other with a critical eye. And they wonder, and they want to make sure that they're real, and
It's hard to guess what people's motivations are.
That's what I'm saying. It's hard to.
If you don't know them personally, how are you going to guess their motivations? Most of the time, we don't even know our own.
That's what I'm saying. I go to bed every night, I wonder what my motivation is. And all I'm saying is that at those levels, each person, I mean, again, it's just difficult. And that's what I'm saying. Even the provocateurs, you're wondering, was he doing that as part of his job description, or was he just greedy? You know, I mean, and you don't know, you know, and that's the thing where it's difficult, you know. And for me, the way I deal with a lot of that is when I see them, in fact, one of the leading skeptics, I know he's dishonest. Is he being dishonest because it's his ego, or is he being dishonest because he's on the payroll? I don't know, and you know what? I'm not sure it matters, you know. And so it's a thing where
the point is, you can pick up on the dishonesty. Where that dishonesty is coming from is for somebody else to figure out.
Absolutely, you don't know, and so that's the thing where. And I will say this: I don't get too biblical here, but many are called and few are chosen. I mean, it's like very few aspirants ever get to the level where that the big guys take them seriously. Very few. I mean, it's very few that actually get really taken seriously. There's a lot of pretenders who want to be contenders, but most people don't have what it takes to do that, because you literally have to sacrifice your life to get to where you're playing at those levels. I mean, the people that I know that are playing at these levels, they figure they're going to die. They pretty much have just figured that they're going to die, you know, and they're just kind of going, you know, but maybe I'll get some good work done before my day comes. I mean, and I know people that are doing it, and that's the way they look at it. And I just, you know, you got to stand there in awe and see that, but that's where they are. And so, no, anybody who's playing at those high levels, you are risking your life. And anybody who's playing at those high levels that has any clue knows that you are risking, and you're risking your life in many ways. It's not just that you're going to get snuffed out. It's just that, oh, my God, oh my God, I've been there. It's like it's your allies become actually they hurt you more. I mean, that's the crazy part, you know. Like in Ventura, when the sledgehammer comes down, I mean, it's like, yeah, you're suffering from the big. In fact, Dennis in Ventura in Seattle, his company got stolen when, again, they had them in a headlock. So they get you in a headlock, and that's when your friends see their opportunity to steal it all, you know, and that's the, you know, that's the, anybody who's played at those levels knows exactly what I'm talking about, you know, and so it's difficult. It's very difficult to mount an effort with enough of the people, the right stuff, you know. And in fact, I've, in Ventura, when the dust settled, I realized that if there were 50 people like the few of us who supported Dennis and some of the inventors, there were 50 of us who would have stood firm, we might have had a chance. If there were 100 of us, it would have been easy. But there were two of us, you know, and it's just like...
Out of all the people that didn't just turn their back or walk away, and the ones that attack you, that come up and see a vulnerability and, time to get in there. You can go down the list and out of the 200 people you knew, two people stand up and say, oh, I'll give you a hand with that, no problem. Yeah, I'm willing to put my life on the line.
Well, and it's numbers like that, you know, and so it's
that's pretty standard, I think.
Well, then that's what I, you know, that was my big lesson. In fact, the biggest lesson I realized, and this is something that is not a popular realization, but when everybody who's played at this level knows exactly what I'm talking about. Personal integrity is the world's scarcest commodity. And you don't get to find out what you're made out of, really, until you're putting it on the line. And you don't really get to find out what the people around you are made of until they're putting it on the line. And that's when you really find out. And I've met some diamonds, okay? But that it's about, I mean, you don't find diamonds very many places. I found a few, and they've been pressure tested. But you know what? The people who have passed the test at that level, a number of them are dead. You know, it's like passing the test at that level quite often costs you your life. And so that's part of the problem.
Yeah, and there's also you have to take the human personality into consideration here. And there's certain ways you deal with certain personalities. There are some people that if you approach them with a threat, they will go all out at that point. They will. They're the type of personality that if you threaten them, that's it. They're going to do it. Now they're going to do it for real. Now all the stops are being pulled out because you threatened them. It's a personal. It's the paladin mentality. They turn into paladins. They have to now do it as a quest, as a goal, the holy grail.
Absolutely.
And then there's other personalities. Now you can't come at those people with aggression or threats. You have to find a different way to handle those people.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And there's other people, you know, if you're an intelligence gatherer, you know that that money will be the way you approach a person. That if you set down, I think Bearden ran into this. There was a guy showed up at the door and to one of the people, inventors that he knew personally, and set down two cases, one with $5 million, the other one with $5 million. The guy calmly said, here's the deal. You're going to come work for us. I'm going to give you this. There's $5 million in each of these cages. I'm going to give this to you now. It's tax-free, completely tax-free, and it's yours to do with as you please. We're going to give this to you, and you're going to come work for us. Your invention will not go to waste. We will be using your invention, and you will be paid a yearly stipend to manage it and come check on it and anything upgrades you want to do to it. That's fine as well. But you're now working with us. That's option one. Option two is we have a couple gentlemen in the car waiting at your kid's school.
I have a section of my adventure site in the title. In fact, it's sort of a phrase I see used now. They make you an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah. What option do you think he took?
Well, and again, when I heard Bearden talking in 1998, he talked about a friend of his who sort of, again, kind of disappeared from the scene, and Bearden figured that he was made the offer he couldn't refuse. You know, and so.
Took the money and ran. And just maintained the, you know, took the money, took the yearly income, and went, okay, good, I'm good. I'm set for life now.
Yeah, if you're the average person like most of us, and again, somebody says, hey, how about $10 million to go away? You know, that's a life-changing sum of money. What I found, and this is, I write about it, in Ventura, There are some rich people who've poked their nose into this. And one came to our facility who was worth like $400 million or something. And he had a windmill farm in Arizona or whatever. And when you're worth $400 million, how do you bribe a guy with $400 million? So they just go straight to the stick. So your whole thing of, you know, the suitcase of cash or that, well, they just forget the suitcase of cash. Your family will be dead by dawn unless you stop tonight.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was the, and that's another offer that, in fact, this guy, he told us, he came to our facility in a limo and he said, you know, when they told me, because he had sunk about like $35 million, which was like 9% of his net worth into this facility. And he was told that here's the deal. You're going to leave and never come back or your family will be dead by dawn. What's it going to be? And the guy hangs up the phone. And again, they made it clear that they could deliver, right? And so he banged in his numbers, and he's like, it was like 9% of his net worth was invested in this whole hobby he had of doing this facility. And he said, it's not worth it. And he packed his briefcase, and he walked out, and he never looked back. And he came to our facility and said, you know, because we were flying pretty high back then, and he said, I wish you the best. But you have no idea what you're up against.
Yeah.
And you know what? He was absolutely right.
He just came in to say, yeah, you're doing great work. Good luck with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a year later, no, it was less than a year later, Dennis was in jail with $1 million bail, and we were completely wiped out. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it was educational. Absolutely. So.
Well, it's been great.
Yeah, this was, you know, I wasn't sure how this conversation would go, but you know what? I'm glad we had this conversation. This was stuff that, for me, I hope that any aspirants in the free energy field listen, you know, because this is not knowledge that was easily garnered.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on the show again, Wade. I appreciate having you.
Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. If anybody wants to check out Wade's website, it's www.ahealedplanet.net. And you can check out the archive of Wade's show at www.spectrumradionetwork. And just click on the archives button or the past shows button. And you can hear Wade's, not only this show, but you can hear his previous show with us, where he went into a lot more detail on his adventures in the early days. Today was more of a technical approach and getting more details on some of the technologies that were out in the past and hopefully we're going to have in the future if we can get the big boys out of the way. Or I don't know if we really have to get them out of the way. Do we wait? We just have to wait for them to open up to the point where...
I pray for their souls.
Yeah.
And that they come to the point of doing what they think is the right thing.
Yeah.
That's what I do. You know, yeah.
You know, and I've said this before. I think humans have to go to space. Just like we have to go to the deeper and deeper into the oceans, we have to go and explore areas on our planet that we've never been before. We have to go to space. And those technologies, I mean, just anti-gravity alone,
mm-hmm.
is going to help tremendously for that endeavor. So I think that they were going to get to the point where we just have to openly go to space. And I'm not saying there's not a, you know, an effort now that's being done in the black op community, say, that's exploring. And while we're running around in 747s there, perhaps in more advanced technology out there, you know, flying around space. But as a global community, I think humans definitely have to get that it's just part of the human nature to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the area I think we got to go next. I think that's part of it.
Yeah, I don't think Star Trek's that fictional.
I don't think so. I think a lot of that's going on now.
Uh-huh. I think so too.
Thanks again, Wade.
Thank you very much, guys.
Okay, thank you. All bye-bye. Right. Have a great night.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.